Good evening, and welcome to tonight's program hosted by the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley. My name is Dr. Meredith Rudolph. It is my pleasure to introduce Pauline Frommer, co-president of Frommer Media. Pauline has been traveling with her family and legendary father, Arthur Frommer, since she was 4 months old. After graduating from Wesleyan University, Pauline worked alongside her father for over 17 years as a writer and editor, developing over 300 titles and helping over 6 million travelers a year. She appeared for several years on CNN's Headline News, presenting weekly travel segments. She is the host of a nationally syndicated radio program, The Travel Show. She was the founding editor of Frommers.com, winner of the coveted People's Choice Webby Award, and currently she's the editorial director of the Frommer Guidebooks. Pauline has won the prestigious Lowell Thomas Medal from the Society of American Travel Writers, and the guidebook she wrote was named Best Guidebook by the North American Travel Journalists Association. This year, her family reacquired the Frommer brand and is planning an ambitious relaunch of 30 new travel books and digital editions. And on top of all of that, she's most recently returned from a 10-day trip to Taiwan. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Pauline Frommer.
Thank you so much, and I have to say what an honor it is to be kicking off our book tour here at the Commonwealth Club. It's been a long road. I'm hoping by the end of this speech you will have the tools to improve and also pay less for your vacations in all price ranges. But before we get into that, I want to tell you a little bit about the history of the Frommer Guides and what we're doing now. In 1955, my father, Arthur Frommer, was drafted into the Army. It was the height of the Korean War, but luckily, he spoke German and Russian because his mother was a Russian immigrant and his father was a German immigrant. And so the day before he was supposed to be sent to Korea, instead he was sent to Berlin, where he sat in an office 8 hours a day and received spies from the East who would tell him how many loaves of bread were baked in the East and how many chickens were killed, because there was a theory that if the East was about to invade, there would be an uptick in food production. And when he wasn't doing that, he traveled. He traveled and he traveled and he traveled, and he was really the only soldier on the base to travel, because this was right after World War II, Europe was in ruins, and there was this wrong idea that if you didn't stay in very expensive hotels, you could get sick. Something could go wrong. It was too dangerous a place to travel. And so he was having such a great time traveling and telling all his buddies on the base about it that he wrote a little book called The GI's Guide to Germany. It sold out in PXs across Europe, and so when he came back and became a lawyer, he thought maybe civilians would like this, and he wrote a little book called Europe on $5 a Day, which became an overnight bestseller and changed his life. Cut forward to the 1970s. For a number of reasons, he decided to stop self-publishing. He went with a series of publishers. Then in August of last year, the books were sold to a large firm, and then in April of this year, we reacquired the Frommer books back. And my father says he's the oldest fledgling publisher, he's 84 now, in the history of publishing, it's now a family business once again, and we were able to rehire all our great writers. We're coming out with a new type of product. We felt that travel guides, a lot of them had become doorstops, impossible to travel with. And so we're trying to come out with guides that are more concise, more to the point, still in every price range, but that only tell you, we know that you can get comprehensive travel information on the internet. You get these guides, and you're only going to be going to restaurants that you won't find in any other city but the place you're in, hotels that will really enhance your vacation and the experiences that will make your travel great. So that's the end of my little commercial for the new Fromer guides. Let me tell you next about some of the good and bad news in travel and what is going to be happening. And I'll start with the airlines. Now, this word kaboom that's on the screen has nothing to do with airline safety. Air travel is safer than ever. It's the safest form of travel out there. But thanks to mergers, prices are rising and rising and rising. Plus, thanks to the airline's ability to collect travel information about you and I, prices are going to be rising. They have this scheme that has been actually approved to sell customized tickets to you. So if they know that you usually check a bag, soon they're going to be saying, we will give you a ticket which will be not only the price of your ticket, but also the price of that bag you usually check. Oh, and we'll also throw in priority boarding. Now, why is this bad? It's bad because it's going to make it near impossible to compare airline tickets. And that has been what's keeping prices low. Such sites as Expedia, Orbitz, Travelocity, the ability to go there and see, oh, wait, Americans charging much more than Delta on this route or whatever it is. That's going to be gone because they're going to say you can't get these customized tickets unless you come to us directly. And it's going to muddy the waters. So how do we fight back? And prices are rising, and they're going to continue to rise thanks to these mergers, unfortunately. The first merger was in 2009. Prices are already 15% higher. If you look at holiday airfares, they're 10% higher from just last year. So what do you do to save money? You look at the search engines that don't sell travel. They have names, and I'm sorry that you were told to turn your phones off, because I always tell people they can use their smartphones to take pictures of the slides I put up, and you're welcome to do that as long as the sound is off. So you look at the search engines that don't sell travel but simply search for travel information. They have weird names you might not have heard of before, like HipMonk, DoHop, and Momondo.com. And these search engines don't take higher commissions from the airlines that pay them more. So you go to certain search engines or really booking engines, and certain airlines are going to float up to the top whether or not they have the lowest prices. These search engines, HipMonk, DoHop, Momondo, give you a much more impartial and broader search. You also want to book on a Tuesday or Wednesday if you can. Why is that? Because the airlines post their sales on Monday, and then they all match each other on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And then the prices start to rise on the weekends, because that's when most people book their travel. And so the airlines know that, and they charge the highest prices then. You also never want to book more than 6 weeks in advance. That's because if you book farther out than that, that's for domestic travel. It's a little different internationally. If you book farther out than that, the airlines know they've got you. They know you have to travel, and they don't release the lower-priced seats earlier than that. So if you can, hold off till 6 weeks in advance as well. Non-direct flights may be cheaper. Two one-ways now sometimes are cheaper. You want to be flexible on airports and dates and times. You want to use local agencies. And what I mean by that is, if there is a certain ethnic group in your community that is constantly going back to the home country, you will often find the best deals by dealing with their travel agents, because they know every trick in the book. I'll give you an example. I was flying to Japan And I contacted an agency called Nippon Travel in Washington, D.C. And it took a couple of tries to get somebody who spoke English, because most of their agents simply speak Japanese with their customers. They knew that MasterCard had a certain promotion that saved me $50 a ticket. And with my family of four, that was a savings of $200. That wasn't anywhere on the internet, but because I was dealing with a company that only dealt with Japan, they knew that trick and they could save money. So look at these specialist travel agents, can save you a lot of money. You want to use a local agency. I said that already. You want to think, don't pay premium unless it really is premium. A lot of these airlines are charging extra for seats that are at the front of the plane, even though they don't give you any more legroom. There's a very good website called seatguru.com, which will allow you to see whether it's worth it. There's a new agency out there called Options Away, and what it does is it's applying what they do in finance with options to tickets. And it's saying you can hold your ticket for up to 6 weeks at this price if you'll pay us $6. And they bet that the price won't go up. And if it does, they eat the difference. So if you aren't sure that you're going to travel, but you see a good price and you want to hold it, Options Away can be a very good a method for you to book. Finally, the best way to save money on travel right now is to follow your favorite airline on Twitter or Facebook. That's because they do not want their airline seat being sold by Orbitz, Travelocity, Expedia, etc., because they have to pay them a commission. They want you to book direct, so they hold these three-hour sales, and they announce them on Twitter, and you have to be following them to know about them, unfortunately. So it's a very good thing. There's a company called TripTwit that if you know you're traveling somewhere, you know that probably American will likely have the best options for you. You can follow it through TripTwit. They will alert you. I also forgot the big thing. I have to thank Allianz Travel Insurance, who is underwriting this book tour. So I forgot to say that at the beginning, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Hotels. Hotel rates in 2013 are up. The average is $110 a night. $195 billion were spent on extra fees at hotels in 2012. These are resort fees where they charge you for using the pool. These are hotels that are getting rid of their self-park, so you have to use the valet. I mean, these are hotels that deliver a newspaper to your door and then charge you for it. So there are all kinds of little extra fees that you need to know about because they will not show up in the search. And they can literally, for valet fees, that can be $35, $40 a night. So you need to know what you're getting into with the extra fees when you're comparing hotels. So what do? You may consider renting an apartment instead of going with a hotel, or doing an alternative form of lodging. For example, Airbnb, which is a San Francisco-based company, Wimdu, Roomarama, Evergreen Bed and Breakfast, these are companies that will rent you rooms within locals' houses, and you can save a heck of a lot of money that way. Evergreen Bed and Breakfast is only for seniors. Airbnb is one I use all the time because you get reviewed as a traveler and as the host, and you can get incredible savings and adventures too. I went to Cambridge, Massachusetts once, and I stayed at the home of an acupuncturist for $35 a night. Why? I showed up and I was sleeping on the acupuncture table. They put a sheet over it. But it was absolutely fine. It was very comfortable, and they were lovely people. If you really want to save money, there are two companies called GlobalFreeloaders.com and Couchsurfing.com, and these are people who just love having travelers in their homes. They feel like it brings travel into their daily lives. And I have a good friend who's a harpist She spent a year on the road with the touring company of South Pacific in the orchestra, and in order to save money, she spent that entire year doing couch surfing and staying with strangers around the U.S. And she said in that entire year, she only encountered one weirdo. The rest became friends for life, and she had adventures and knew people in the towns and went to the best restaurants, or the not the best, but the cheapest, greatest local restaurants, because she was there with locals. There's also home exchanges. I think the best company for that is a company called homeexchange.com. And I'll tell you a story. A couple of years back, I interviewed a woman who decided to trace her genealogy in Wales. So she went to this tiny town in Wales that got no tourism, and she decided to go there because she wanted to trace her genealogy. And so and she did a home exchange to save money. The very first day, she got a knock on her door, and it was a neighbor saying, "I heard you were here, was wondering if you'd like to come over for a spot of tea." And the next day, another neighbor came over and said, "Would you like to take a ramble? There's some wonderful hiking trails in the neighborhood." And then the next day, another neighbor came over and said, "Would you like to tour the local factory? It may sound dull, but it's really very interesting." And this kept happening, and she finally realized that she was the single most exciting thing that had happened to this tiny town in Wales. And on the day she left, about 100 of her neighbors showed up and presented her with a framed painting of the town square. And she's still in touch with many of them. She was there for 3 weeks. And that shows that you're going to make friends on home exchanges. Why? Because everybody's scared you're going to bust up their place, so they send people over to check up on you. So you have this inbuilt social network. So is it safe, I guess, is the next question. From what I hear, and this is something my father has actually done, in 99.9% of the cases, it's absolutely safe, because you spend so much time setting up the darn home exchange. You spend months talking back and forth that you really know the person who you're exchanging with. And you have their home hostage while they have your home hostage. So you have a lot of reasons to behave. The worst that usually happens is maybe a lamp gets broken. But people exchange cars. They travel with children and exchange toys. I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful way to travel. Women Welcome Women is a little bit different. That's an organization from Britain. It was a woman who got jealous of her son being able to do a cultural exchange. And she thought, why can't adults do this? And so she set up this organization. You join it for 35 British pounds and you get a directory. It's now an online directory of women all over the world who simply want to welcome other women travelers. And that might mean you can call them with questions before your trip. They'll take you out to dinner. Sometimes they'll even put you up in their spare bedroom if you want that, or if not, that's fine. But it's another way to have a social network when you travel. And I don't know about you, but what I remember, yes, the Louvre is wonderful, and it's incredible to see the Taj Mahal, but I remember the people I meet. And with these types of travel, you not only save money, but you meet real people. You meet people beyond the concierge. And to me, that's the magic of travel. Another great cheap way to travel, monasteries and military hotels and nunneries. When else are you going to get inside a monastery to stay? And you know, they can be, yes, monastic, but you have a very unusual experience. Now, some of them have curfews, so you have to find out about that. But most of the people I know who stay this way find it to be great. And military hotels. There's a very nice military hotel in New York City where the average room cost is now $240 a night. Military can stay for half that, and that includes veterans. You don't have to be active military to stay in these hotels. And they're in Orlando, they're in Hawaii, they're in great places all over the world. You just have to show them your discharge papers. There's also rentals. I recommend Airbnb, HomeAway.com, VRBO, which stands for Vacation Rental by Owner, Zonder.com, FlipKey.com. You have to be careful with rentals. They tend to be on the same price level as hotel rooms. So you get more space, you get a kitchen to cook in, but you don't pay any more than a hotel room, but you have to do your due diligence. You have to look at these sites, make sure there are lots of photos up, and this is one where you do want to get travel insurance. After 9/11, I got a lot of emails from my readers at Fromers.com saying that even though there were no planes going where they were going, they couldn't get their money back from the homes they had rented. And that's because when you're dealing with a rental, you have a person who has one property. And so they do not give your money back like hotels will. So that this is a case where you really, really do want to get travel insurance. If you do want to go to a hotel, make sure you search for it in the right way. I like such sites as Hotels Combined, Trivago, HipMonk.com, because, again, they give you a broader and a more impartial search. There's also a really interesting site called Tingo.com. What it does is you book with them, and then if the price drops, they refund the difference to you after your stay. Now, do they always have the lowest prices to begin with? They tend to for the luxury hotels. I don't find they're as good in the budget category. So it really depends on how you travel. But that's another one to look at. Plus, you might want to just bid blind and stay wherever. You know you're going to Paris. Why not bid on Priceline or Hotwire? You can find out what hotel you may get if you go to the site biddingtraveler.com, because Bidding Traveler is run by regular tourists who use these services, and they spill the beans on what hotels they got on Priceline and Hotwire. And the same hotels come up over and over and over, so you can kind of tell what you're going to get. Rumor should actually be rumortravel.com. And this is a new one. One of the ways you can save money on travel is to hotels is if you book your hotel room way in advance and pay for it in advance. The problem with that is, what if your plans change? Then you're stuck with a hotel room you can't use. Rumor Travel has created a marketplace for these unused hotel reservations. So that, say, you're 6 months ago, you booked a room to Paris at a very low rate, and then your uncle dies and you cannot go. You can put your room up, and the nice thing for travelers is, because people want to move these rooms because they can't use them, these were discounted rooms to begin with, they discount them lower. So often you can find rooms for 80% off what you usually would pay. So an excellent source. Air hotel packages can sometimes be a good deal. Depends on where you're going. If you're going to a place that gets lots of tourists, a Cancun, when I was researching Pauline Frommer's Cancun, we found out that you saved on average $200 for a week-long stay by booking an air hotel package as opposed to booking the airfare and the hotel separately, because the hoteliers want to be able to hide how much they're actually charging you with the airfare, because they're in fierce competition. So in those places in the world like Cancun, like Paris, like Orlando, where there's a lot of competition between hotels, you can save a lot of money with air hotel packages. In those places where there's less competition, usually the deals aren't as good. And these are some of the places I recommend for air hotel packages. VacMart, Pleasant Holidays, Book It, Expedia actually is very good for the Caribbean, Apple Vacations, Vacation Express, Travelocity. Travelocity has kind of been taken over by Expedia, but that's another. For Europe, you look at GoToday.com, Gate One Travel, Scepter Tours is very good for Ireland, VirginVacations.com, Aer Lingus Vacation Store. There's also ways to have more fun with your sightseeing. just as the internet has allowed people to get together with Women Welcome Women and with other types of unusual vacations, you can now have customized experiences through such companies as Viable.com, which is a San Francisco company, Urban Adventures, Context Travel. What these places do is they allow locals who have a specialty to advertise it, and you can have a specialty trip to a city. So, for example, for San Francisco, where you all, you know, you're outside it, there are tours now of the stairways for people who want to get exercise when they're in San Francisco. If you're really interested in tasting the local local cuisine, eatwith.com, eatwithalocal.com, and Homefood IT allows you to go to locals' homes. Homefood IT, I think, is the best of them. That's in Italy. And they pick the best home chef, usually a woman, in each town, and they say to her, "We think you are the best home cook in this village. We would like you to support your village or city by accepting tourists into your home." And, you know, it's this Italian grandma who's very, very proud, and you go and you have the meal of a lifetime, and I think it costs about 35 euros. With wine, you can get her recipes. Often there might be a language barrier, but from the people I've talked to who have done this, they said it was the highlight of their Italian vacation. And then if you want to take a guided tour, if you're nervous about going to a place, look at the smaller places, the greener companies, such companies like Intrepid Travel, G Adventures, Joser Tours. These are all companies that promise you that you'll be traveling with no more than 14 people. They're all international companies, so you're not traveling with other Americans. You're traveling with Brits and Kiwis. And I took an Intrepid Travel family adventure, and on my trip was a woman from Munich and her daughter, two British families, and a family that lived a block away from me in New York, who I'd never met before. But we had a ball. They stay in locally owned guest houses. They don't use big coaches. You use local transportation, so it's a green way to travel. You have a lot of time off, as well as time together to see the sights. So it's a much lower to the ground way to travel. If you're going to a place that you're nervous about going to alone, but you don't want to have that experience of seeing the country through the window of a tour bus with 40 other Americans, these are good options for you. And I'm going to skip this third-party adventure consultants. And then there's volunteer vacations, which can be a wonderful, wonderful way to travel. And nowadays, you don't have to do it for the entire vacation. You can do it for a short amount of time. I'll give you an example. At the Give the Kids the World Village, that is the village in Orlando where kids who are part of the Make-A-Wish program stay. And they had to create this special village for them because it's going to Disney World is the number one request that the Make-A-Wish Foundation gets. And yet so many of these kids are so ill by the time they get to Orlando that they needed a place with special facilities for them. And it's totally run by volunteers. I volunteered during my time in Orlando. I spent an evening making banana splits at the ice cream parlor. Everything is free for the kids, so I just handed them out or ice cream sundaes. And to meet these kids, to see them light up at a simple banana split, it was the most magical thing I did in Orlando. And it's a really, really wonderful thing to do while there. You also could work with turtles, helping defend their nests during laying season in Costa Rica with Parsimina turtles. You could go to the British Trust for Conservation volunteers and help for a couple of days at a historic home that needs some work done. You could go to the Colorado Trail Foundation. If you want to do a longer vacation, you could spend your 2 weeks in Romania holding babies in an orphanage. They know that babies who aren't touched enough are damaged, and so they have volunteers who go there and just interact with the babies through global volunteers. Earthwatch allows you to work with scientists all over the world, so you could find yourself in the middle of the Atlantic tagging sharks or on an archaeological dig in Israel. I mean, not only do you do good things with these volunteer vacations, but you have adventures that you couldn't have any other way. Vaughan Systems is an interesting one. That is an English language school in Spain where they get volunteers to teach the English because they want it to be colloquial English. So you go over, you pay for your airfare, and then for 2 weeks, everything is paid for, and it's your job to talk and talk and talk and talk to these Spanish business people mostly. But you get wine at every meal, so it makes it easier to talk and talk and talk. And people I know who have done it say that it was one of the best vacations they ever took. Because you don't only stay in the classroom, you also tour around. They do it in Salamanca, Spain, which is its classic ancient university city, and they do it outside Madrid, up in the mountains. It's supposed to be just a wonderful thing to do. And there's the American Hiking Society. For about $200, you go into our underfunded national parks and you do what Roosevelt's folks did during the Depression. You help rebuild the trails that are going to rack and ruin, and you help preserve some of our most beautiful places in the world. All right, cruising. If you want to cruise, there are ways to do it. Oh, I've got 5 minutes left. All right, if you want to cruise, you want to do it in a smart way, which means never, ever, ever book from the cruise line. You want to book through a travel agent. And why is that? That's because when travel agents sell a lot of cruises, they get rewarded by the cruise lines with free perks, with upgrades, such as onboard ship credit, such as wine and roses in your room. Some of the best cruise discounters, and there are many, are go-away travel, vacations to go, cruises only. Basically, if it has Ahoy or cruise in the name, you know they're a cruise specialist, and you want to talk to a bunch of them. There's an interesting one called Cruise Compete. What it does is it sends out your cruise request to different travel agents, and they can't come back to you and say, okay, I'll get you this cruise for this much, and I'll get you an upgrade. Usually the prices aren't that different. It's the perks, and the perks can really save you a lot of money. You can get free shore excursions, which are incredibly expensive. And speaking of shore excursions, never, ever buy them from the cruise line. They are so outrageously overpriced. I'll give you an example. When you go on an Alaskan cruise, they'll charge you $50 to go to the Mendenhall Glacier. There is a public bus that stops at the cruise port, costs $1.50, takes you to the Mendenhall Glacier. You get out, you take the same ranger tour that the people who paid $50 did. It's free. And then you come back on the bus. If you are in a place where, say, you're in Ephesus and you really want to see, or you go to Kushadasi and you really want to see Ephesus, that's an hour away. You might need a tour there. So there are these companies that have sprung up, cruising excursions, shore trips, and Viator, which will do exactly what the cruise company does, but for half the price often. And instead of being with 40 other people, you'll be with maybe 8. So just plan it in advance. Other ways to save money, repositioning cruises. That's when the cruise lines move from their winter to their summer homes, go to an inside cabin. It's also better if you have seasickness. And time it right. Though this may sound crazy, hurricane season is darn cheap. No cruise line has ever been caught in a hurricane because they can move faster. So if you really want a cheap cruise, you go then, or even more smart, you go in November when hurricane season is over, but hurricane season pricing is still in place. For Alaska, maybe you go in May or September. It may be a little chillier, but you won't be dealing with these horrific crowds. So that's the end of this part of the presentation. I was going to show you pictures of some great places to go, but that'll have to be next time. And now we're going to have a conversation. So please write down your questions. And are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Thank you. Can you introduce yourself?
Absolutely. Hi, everybody. I'm Peter Delavette. I am a reporter for the Mercury News. I write about startups. And I also, thank you, am an occasional travel writer. So I've actually had the pleasure of meeting Pauline before, and excited to be with you tonight. The first question, obviously we have a lot of stuff that folks in the audience want to know, but I wanted to ask you this, especially as somebody who's in the publishing business. It seems in a way like kind of a crazy time to be launching a line of books, dead ink on trees, as we say. Obviously, Lonely Planet's had a lot of challenges as a brand, et cetera, et cetera. What are your thoughts about the future of the printed product, the guidebook, that whole interface?
Well, I would say that we're not married to dead trees. Our books will be coming out not only in paper, but also as apps, as e-books. What we're married to is journalism. We truly believe that you get better information when you get it from somebody who most of our authors live in the areas. So they're locals. They know which restaurants are best because they've eaten at them all. They know which hotels are best because they've stayed or visited them all. When you go to a user-generated site, you're taking the advice of a person who's been to exactly one place. When I was working on a Hawaii guide, I went to this rundown B&B that was run by the nicest lady ever. She actually was selling the place, so she wasn't putting any money into it. And she told me very proudly that she was the number one B&B on the Big Island, according to TripAdvisor. And I said to her, how did that happen? Because I knew that right up the road there was a nicer place that was charging a third less. And she said, well, I got a bad review. And so I wrote to all my former clients, and they all posted these great reviews on TripAdvisor. And so because of that, she was number one. Now, that is the innocent way she's number one. We also know that user-generated sites have become so powerful that a lot of major hotel companies are paying people to write these reviews. So a lot of it is disguised marketing. So we're hoping that people will look at Fromers, know that it's a trusted name, know that we hire journalists. Most of our writers work for local newspapers and magazines. They're embedded in the community. Their only client is the reader. We're out of business if you guys don't trust us. And so we're hoping for the best. We're hoping it works out.
There, as you see, I'm covered in question cards here, and three of them are actually about this very question we were talking about online reviews. So how do we sort out the real reviews from the fake reviews? Are there tips? Are there certain sites that are more reliable than others?
No. I don't know. I don't know how you sort out the real ones. Some people say, oh, I can tell it's real because it's misspelled or the grammar's wrong, but, the people who are writing the fake reviews know that too. And it's also not just, as I said before, it's not just fake versus real. It's when you take a hotel suggestion from someone, and sometimes these user-generated reviews can be very helpful because you see one from a week ago and you find out that there is construction going on across the street from the hotel. That's something you won't find from a guidebook. So I'm not saying that they're not useful at all, but I think they're one resource, and I don't think that they're always the best resource. Because I have no idea how you tell if the review is real or not. No idea.
Somebody asked about a travel book for seniors with larger type. Is that something you are thinking about doing in your new product line?
That's something my father wants us to do. we're actually partnering with AARP on a book called Places for Passion, which is going to be written by Dr. Pepper Schwartz. She's on the Today Show every week, and because that's AARP, that's going to be in 10-point type. But I don't know. It's such a quandary because you want to have as much information as you can while still keeping the book light and portable.
Right.
So at this point, we're keeping the font size as it is.
I was glad, by the way, to hear you talk about portability. My last vacation was with my family to my extended family to Disney World, and my dad wanted me to pick up the Inside Guide to Disney. I got it from the library, and it was the size of the phone book, and it's crazy.
Do you really need that much information to go to Disney World?
I didn't.
I guess some people do. I don't know.
I didn't. I'd have you sort of destination-specific questions. Could we just kind of whip through those kind of lightning round style? And you can. Somebody wants to know about safe places for women to travel alone in Mexico. Any thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at Mexico, it's a huge country. And there are places that are safer than the U.S. You go to Cancun and the Mayan Riviera, their murder rate is half that of Chicago's. And yet nobody in this room would say, I feel nervous going to Chicago. So you can go to the Riviera Nayarit, you can go to Cancun, you can go to the Mayan Riviera. The places you can't go to, you don't go to the border towns for the most part. You don't go to, unfortunately, Acapulco anymore. That's become a major place for the drug trade. You can go to the colonial cities of Mexico with no problem. San Miguel de Allende is beautiful, filled with expats. Americans live there, as many Americans as Mexicans, it feels like, when you're there sometimes. So for those places, and I personally, I love Mexico City. I know there are pockets of it that are dangerous, but I think if you keep your wits about you, they have the second most Art Deco buildings outside of Miami. They have the third most museums of any city in the world. Incredible food, incredible cultural sites. Mexico City is a wonder.
Another question about Italy. You had mentioned some of the different places in which one can stay. Someone in the audience wants to know, are there still pensioni in Italy?
Are there still pensioni? Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I thought so too, but it's been a while since I've been there. So.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a wonderful option. I mean, Italy, it's interesting. Italy, certain parts are being loved to death, like the Cinque Terre. And I would say, and I maybe shouldn't say this on radio, but I would say avoid the Cinque Terre now. Because it used to be this place of unspoiled little fishing villages, doesn't really have great art, doesn't have great cuisine, but now it has hundreds of thousands of people going to these little fishing villages, and it doesn't have the ability to absorb them. I'd say go to Sicily instead. There are places, Sicily is like Italy was, according to my father, 30 years ago. It's still inexpensive. There are places where tourists never go, and you can really see the real Italy. And they're the passionate Italians. They speak with their hands. The food is fabulous and really unusual because for so many years it was invaded by so many different people. You see a lot of blonde Sicilians because the Normans conquered it. And so you have a lot of blondes there, but you also have, instead of just pasta, you also have a lot of rice dishes because it has such a Middle Eastern influence there. So a really, really fascinating place. And there's this woman named Carmelina, and she has started, Sicily has major economic problems. And one of their problems is all of the old young people are leaving to go to the mainland where the work is. And so she has tried to revive her village, which is called Sant'Ambrogio. So if you look up Carmelina and Sant'Ambrogio, she has this program where you stay in a local apartment, and then you do these great adventures around the town, like you spend one day with a local shepherd, and you see how he tends his flock and how he makes his cheese. And then you spend another day with a grandma in her kitchen learning how to cook, and you become part of the fabric of this small Sicilian town.
So. Somebody just suggested the agriturismo for farm B&Bs
yes.
in Italy.
That's a wonderful thing to do in Italy. The agriturismo was a way to keep farmers on the land, and they're inspected by the government, so you won't be in a hovel, which is not something you ever really have to worry about in Italy. But You stay in a farm. At night, they give you the wine from the grapes they have grown and the cheese that they have made, and it's just a magical experience.
Still in Europe, but a different country, somebody wants to know, how do I get a dinner invitation in Paris with locals?
Eatwith.com. Or one of these other organizations where people do it. There had been this guy named, I can't remember what his name is, but I hear his food isn't that good and that you won't really meet locals at his house. You'll just meet other tourists. He became a little too popular.
Some other food questions. What about suggestions for finding gluten-free food? Specifically, somebody was asking about Paris, but then another person wants to know, just in general, vegan, no flour, no sugar diets. Is it difficult to go to some of these home food places?
I would think it would be difficult to go to a home food place. There are flashcards now because it's become so common to be gluten-free or vegan. That you can show at a restaurant that explain it really well. You can also find apps for this on your phone that will tell what your requirements are.
I will say, having just gone to Disney, I was amazed. My sister and her daughter are gluten intolerant, and I was amazed. Every single place we ate in and around the Magic Kingdom, the chefs would come out. The staff knew just what to do.
It's become much more common. It's not. There's this former travel writer, Dazan McLean, who used to be the frugal traveler for the New York Times. She now runs tours in Hong Kong. And they're food tours. And she said the most common request she gets is gluten-free. Hmm. And so she can put together a gluten-free food tour of Hong Kong for you. And you'll try incredible food. It's very common now that people are making these requests.
Changing continents, somebody wants to know, do you have any tips on finding a good African safari company?
There are two suggestions. In California, there's a wonderful organization called Adventure Center, and they act as a clearinghouse for a number of different safari companies who they vetted. For some reason, I don't understand it, but the British safari companies tend to be less expensive than the ones based in the United States, and yet they're going to the exact same safari camps and using the same guides. And so if you go to Adventure Center, you will find these companies. There's also a Canadian company run by South African expats called Lion World Travel. And they know Africa inside and out. They have the inside track. If you really want to save money on safaris, you go to South Africa, you go to Long Street, where there's all these travel agencies, and you say, which safari is going out without and needs people? And you have to be very flexible to do this, but you'll pay a third of what you would for a safari that way. And you can go on a luxury safari, but you have to be very flexible. But often people cancel, and so these safaris have a space or two. So if you could be really flexible, you just go to South Africa and book one.
A couple of folks wanted to know your recommendations for top Christmas destinations. It's getting to be that time of year right around the corner.
The problem with traveling for Christmas is you have such competition. Everybody wants to do it, and all the expats want to return home to visit their families. So unlike Thanksgiving, where you can get deals, since that's a holiday only we do, It's near impossible to get any good deals for Christmas or not to be dealing with the crowds.
Does that matter whether you're going to a warm weather or cold weather destination?
Doesn't matter, because people are going home to be with their families. And certain destinations totally shut down. For example, you go to London, it's hard to get, they have Christmas and Boxing Day, and 80% of the restaurants close, all the shops close, so it's really quite a dull time to be in London, except for the pantomimes. It's fun to see the pantomimes.
Somebody's asking about your thoughts about the best loyalty programs or credit card programs for hotels or airlines.
Well, I am not a loyalty expert. There's a very good website called Flyer Talk that I would recommend. I know that in the last year, all of the hotels have doubled the number of points you need to get a free room. It used to be that the hotel programs were much better than the airline programs, but I'm not sure you can say that anymore. But I am not an expert because I should be, but you have to have that kind of brain. And I always forget to get the damn points.
You have to go back sometimes and negotiate for them, and that can be a real hassle. I'm doing that now for
a flight segment
that I was a kind of a chaotic check-in, and I got all the way home and I realized, I didn't give them my frequent flyer number in Beijing, of all places, and now I'm going back and forth with the carrier to try to see if those points ever show up. A more sort of general question. It seems like travelers are always trying to get off the beaten path, and yet it's increasingly hard to do. I mean, there's a Starbucks in almost every city, it seems. Here in the Bay Area, we've got a situation going on right now where an 85-year-old man who lives here in Palo Alto in a retirement home and went to North Korea with a friend for vacation, and now he's been taken off the plane.
Yeah,
he's in custody. Nobody
knows
what that. So, I mean, you want to try to get off the beaten path, but you want to do it safely and so forth. I mean, so how do travelers balance that desire to go and see all these places they've heard about, but to not be totally overrun by all
well,
the...
Well, if you're going to go to the places you've heard about, you go in the off season. You go to Venice in January. Now, you might be up to your knees in water because there's flooding often during that time, but that can be fun. It's a fascinating thing to see. Or you go to the places that people haven't heard about yet have wonderful things to see. The second half of my presentation is usually about these places. For example, Poland. I went to Poland because my grandmother left Poland after a series of pogroms, and so I went there with a chip on my shoulder. We wanted to see my great-grandparents' grave, and actually my father came and joined us. And what we found was a spectacular European country that was not overrun with tourists, that was very inexpensive, and that had all the hallmarks of the more expensive European countries, for example, and other things that you don't see. For example, you go to Krakow, and you have outside the city this salt mine that it was, I think, the third UNESCO World Heritage Site. It's fabulous. It was in business for 1,000 years, and the salt miners carved the salt into these extraordinary sculptures. They have a whole church down there with chandeliers made of salt crystals. And then, of course, you see Auschwitz, which is a heart-wrenching sight. I was there with my then 8-year-old, and I was thinking, do I take her, do I not? But how often do you get back to Poland? So I took her, and it was interesting. I thought it was going over her head. She seemed bored. And then my father joined us in Wumja, which was the little town my grandmother was from, and my daughter is happily telling him, the children died first because the gas rose, and my heart sank. But she knows about her background now. She knows that terrible things can happen in this world and that there are also good people. But you, also in Poland, it was very interesting. You go to this section of Krakow that's filled with these beautifully preserved synagogues, that's filled with Jewish restaurants, even though there are hardly any Jews left to staff these places, and they play klezmer music. And I didn't cry at Auschwitz, but when they started playing this glorious music, I embarrassed the heck out of my daughter. But, you know, that's when it hit me. You also see the largest brick castle in Europe, in Poland. The Teutonic Knights invaded Poland to try and Christianize it, even though it was a Christian country. But they had been having such bad luck in the Holy Land, they thought, well, this will be easy. So they went there and built this extraordinary castle called Malbork. And you see these gorgeous bits of architecture, even in Warsaw, which Hitler had a special animus against, and when they were retreating, he told his generals, reduce it to rubble, and they did. You go to Warsaw and you see the pictures of it after World War II, only 3% of the buildings survived, and yet they've rebuilt it to look exactly like it did before World War II. So you go to a place like Poland, you go to a place like Taiwan, where I just was, thanks to Chiang Kai-shek. Chiang Kai-shek, when he came over from China, he stole all the best stuff from the Forbidden City. And it's in this incredible museum in Taiwan. You also had unbroken Chinese culture there because you didn't have the Cultural Revolution. So you see these incredibly vibrant temples, but there's no tourists. The only tourists now are Chinese tourists, actually, who are now going there. And it's inexpensive and it's fascinating. And it was known as Ilha Formosa by the Portuguese sailors, which means beautiful island. So you see, also see these extraordinary nature sites, and the food is spectacular. So there are still safe places to go that are off the beaten path. You just have to be imaginative.
Wonderful. That's a great answer. Back on the Christmas theme, somebody wanted to know about offbeat places in your hometown, New York City. If somebody were going to New York for Christmas, where are some offbeat places they might go to find?
Well, I don't know if this is that offbeat. There's the Messiah Sing-Along, which is always fun, at Avery Fisher Hall. You go to the Cathedral of St. John the Divine, which is the largest cathedral in the world, because St. Peter's is that and not actually a cathedral. And they have an extraordinary midnight mass in which they get a lot of Broadway singers to go to and composers. And so you get this great concert. And the Jewish Museum stays open on Christmas. So the Jews have somewhere to go. So there's all kinds of fun things in my hometown. I wrote the Easy Guide to New York City. So I had a fun time re-exploring my hometown, and there's so many new and exciting things to see there for people of all ages. One of the things I threaten my kids with, I say, if you don't behave, I'm taking you to the Museum of Math, which is a new museum there, but it's actually wonderful. It's a wonderful new museum.
Someone wants to know, are timeshares a good idea?
Timeshares are not a good idea if you're looking for an investment. And that's how they're sold to people. They can be a good thing if you buy them from a disaffected timeshare owner rather than from the timeshare property, because the moment you buy them, they lose value. So I know people who have made good use of them, who trade them, but you don't want to buy them from the company. You want to buy them from somebody who's trying to get out of their timeshare. And during the recession, a lot of people stopped being able to pay their down payment on these timeshares. The thing about timeshares is, apparently, the timeshare salesmen are so good at their jobs that 10% of the people who go to those sessions end up buying a timeshare. So don't ever take a vacation that's supposedly free, because you may end up buying one of them. They're really good salespeople. So I know people have made them pay off. I think you're more likely to make them pay off if you buy them used.
Speaking of pitches, I get pitches as a journalist almost every week about new travel apps. In the past week, I've had everything from using artificial intelligence to help you plan your trip to shipping your luggage ahead of time to save on airline bag fees.
Right.
And a lot of these apps and websites end up not making it. I mean, 6 months later, I go back, and some of them have not been able to get enough rise above all the competition, but they seem like they're still coming. They keep coming. So I'm curious, how do you think internet and mobile tech are going to keep changing the way that we travel?
Well, there's one app I didn't talk to you about that's spectacular. I think that when they fill a need on both sides of the equation, both the travel provider and the traveler, that's when they really work. There's an app called Hotel Tonight, and it only works if you're willing to get a hotel on the day that you're traveling. But because at that point the hotelier is so desperate to get rid of this room, the discounts they're giving, even in New York City, even in Nantucket, even in really expensive destinations, are often 80% off the cost of that room. But you have to be willing to show up in the city without a reservation to take advantage of that. So some of them can be very good. The translation apps, I think, are fabulous. The thing with apps is when you travel, you don't want to use too much of your roaming
data plan, right?
Data plan, because that can be extraordinarily expensive. So you want to make sure that the app only lives on your phone, because you don't want to get up to a place thinking I'm going to use this app and then come home having paid $4.95 for the app and $200 for the roaming charges.
Great point. Last question, and this is one I ask every travel writer I interview. If I were going to give you a plane ticket tomorrow morning to anywhere in the world, where would you go?
Oh, gosh. I always want to go somewhere I haven't been yet. So I guess I would go down under. I have not yet been to Australia or New Zealand. So I'm desperate to go those places. Oops, do we have time for this one?
This one slid right under. I can't even read it. Maybe the person can chat with you afterward.
Okay. I'm into exploring new places. So that's what I would say. If my father was here, he would say he would go to Paris. That he could go to Paris over and over and over. And the thing about Paris is it is a place that rewards repeat visits, because you always find something new and there's always new neighborhoods popping up. Last time I was there, I did an article on cooking schools. And so I got to go to all of these different cooking schools, and it was so much fun. But I also did an evening adventure. If you're ever in Paris and you want to do something after dinner, go to the Palais de Tokyo. It's their contemporary art museum, and yet it's like a party. They're open till midnight, and it's a gallery, but they have the wackiest exhibits and a really great cafe. You can wander around with a glass of wine. And it's a side of Paris that I don't think most tourists go, because it's the museum that the Parisians themselves go to, since it's open till midnight. So you can get into wonderful conversations with people, and it's the hip, edgy Paris. It's really fun. Really, really fun.
Great. Well, thank you so very much.
Well, thank you.
Enjoyed this evening's program brought to you by the Commonwealth Club Silicon Valley. Again, we would like to thank Pauline Frommer, Editorial Director of Frommer Media, Peter DeLevitt, writer for San Jose Mercury News, our audience here in Palo Alto, and those of you joining us on the radio and on the web. And now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club is adjourned.